spite of all our communication technology, no invention is as effective as the sound of the human voice. When we hear the human voice, we instinctively want to listen in the hopes of understanding it, even when the speaker is searching for the right words to say. That's because the human voice resonates differently from everything else in the world. Is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. Listen in on candid conversations with creative entrepreneurs and insanely interesting people.
In this interview, I speak with Jamie Tardy. At a very early age, Jamie made a decision that she wanted to be a millionaire. Paying off $70,000 in debt in 16 months allowed her to leave a six-figure job and start the journey to becoming an eventual millionaire. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by Selz. That's S-E-L-Z.com. If you're looking for a PayPal alternative to sell digital, physical products, and services, check out Selz. Selz allows you to add your products and sell from any site in minutes without any complicated setup or hassle, and they recently added the ability to give your customers a pay-what-you-want option. Many of the Unmistakable Creative listeners are already using the product and absolutely love it. Our other sponsor for today's show is FreshBooks, the simple online accounting solution for small business owners just like you who want to skip the headaches of tax time. No more hunting receipts, digging through invoices, or going through records one at a time. When I started working as a freelancer, my process for invoicing clients was disorganized, manual, and messy. Then I discovered FreshBooks. I tried it once, and I was absolutely hooked. With the click of a button, I could generate an invoice and send it right to my clients without having to track a million different attachments and documents. And it allowed me to keep track of exactly how much revenue I was generating, all in one place. If you're invoicing clients on a regular basis, FreshBooks saves you time and helps you get paid faster. It's kind of a no-brainer. And for a limited time, you can try it completely free for 60 whole days. That's 2 months to try it and see just how much more efficient it will make your whole process for invoicing clients. Visit getfreshbooks.com and make sure you enter the Unmistakable Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you support our show. Jamie, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative.
Thanks so much for having me, Srini.
Yeah, you and I have connected years ago. I mean, when the show was formerly called Blogcast FM, and you know, you've had quite a journey. So I guess, you know, tell us a bit about your story, your background, and how that has led you to what you're up to today.
So starting a blog, I mean, I don't really want to get into starting that sort of thing, but I knew a long, long time ago that I wanted to work for myself, right? I did the corporate thing just like you, didn't really like that route, felt like somebody was, you know, putting me in a little box and I couldn't get out. So finally, after, you know, paying off $70,000 in debt, which was a pain in the butt, I was able to quit a six-figure job that I had. And so being able to quit really gave me a lot of freedom, which was amazing and awesome. And I didn't really know what to do with it at first. So I started a blog because who wouldn't start a blog when you do that, right? So realizing that that didn't really make any money. No, I was actually a business coach. I ended up becoming a business coach shortly after quitting my job. And the blog just sort of made sense. And I started a podcast because a long, long time ago when I was a little girl, I don't know why, but I always wanted to be a millionaire. And not for the money, because to me, yes, I mean, my parents were pretty poor. Mm-hmm. So the money really made a big difference, like in my head when I was eight. But as I grew up, knowing that I went to school and tried to get a six-figure job like as soon as I possibly could, it was definitely not about the money. It was about enjoying the life that I really, really wanted and didn't know if it was attainable. Mm-hmm. So being able to quit that job and then find something that I utterly love to do every single day has just been an immense, amazing opportunity.
So let's do this. Let's dig back into the very beginning of this. I mean, $70,000 in debt. I can't fathom it, because I mean, I still have, you know, probably over six figures of student loan debt. And when I look at that, I'm like, okay, how the hell am I going to get out of this? Which I think in and of itself is a story that we tell ourselves. And I want to get into the psychology of dealing with something like that, because that's no small feat. I mean, on the one hand, you have sort of conflicting desires. You have $70,000 in debt, and yet you're eager to have this life made up of freedom. So let's talk about this. I mean, how do you get out of $70,000 in debt?
Well, the first step, right, is recognizing that you have $70,000 in debt, because I did the utmost I could to ignore it, right? I didn't want to add it up. I knew, and it wasn't even bad. It wasn't even like credit cards. I know a lot of people are in credit card debt, and I was at one point, I think I was in $3,000 or $4,000 in credit card debt, but we had paid that off even before the $70,000 thing. So it was a car loan. Right? A $20,000 car. We just bought a brand new car because, you know, that's what you do when you make good money. We had student loan debt. I mean, I had student loan debt. I mean, I spent a lot of money on student loans, and I think I had about $30,000-something, which really isn't bad considering,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's nothing.
And then, I know, isn't that sad that we think 30 grand is like nothing? and then we had a home equity loan, so it was a variable interest rate. It kind of sucked. So adding those up, and realizing that I was in 70, I was 24, by the way. I was 24 and in $70,000 in debt. And I was like, I am never going to be able to quit my job ever because of this, which is stupid, right? Now, number one, I had to admit that I got myself into this, right? Because I think sort of taking that responsibility while it hurts gives you the power back to be able to take care of it, right? Because I made good money, which was really good, but we spent a lot of money. We had a $250,000 house too, and a whole bunch of other things. So really getting clear on that piece of, hey, I'm in this, I did this, I made some not smart choices, but we bought a brand spanking new car, that sort of thing was the first step, right? Second step, you're like, oh crap, how do I get out? And so realizing what I ended up doing was just read a ton of books, right? What do you do when you don't know what to do? You try and learn from someone else that knows how to do it. So that's what we ended up doing was, it was me and my husband. I was married at the time. He was a performing artist and I was the breadwinner and I was the one that wanted to quit. So he had a variable income. So in my brain, I'm like, I'm going to quit a six-figure job and my husband's a juggler. Right. Like I never had heard of that story before. I thought it was kind of crazy. So, I read Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. I read all that sort of stuff to try and figure it out. And I started a plan and tried to figure out how long it would take me if I saved every penny, sold everything I owned, because I'm the type of person that doesn't like to do things for long periods of time. So I wanted to see how fast I could really get out of debt. And thankfully, I made good money, and we ended up paying off $70,000 in debt in 16 months.
Wow.
And again, selling every... So we sold that $20,000 car that was brand new, all that other fun stuff that totally sucked, because I was attached to that car, which is kind of sad to say, but I had, like, researched it forever. I mean, it's a Honda Civic. It wasn't even that, you know, fancy of a car or anything. But I was, like, attached to it because I imagined, like, bringing the kids to school. Not that I had kids at the time, but I wanted to have kids, and I imagined all that stuff in this wonderful brand-new car. And we sold the car when it was only 2 months old. I think it had, like, 800 miles on it or something like that total. So, like, taking those huge action steps to move you forward faster. And sort of the funny thing, the flip side is last night I actually went out and bought a Honda Civic with cash. So, so I finally bought the car back, cause I love Honda Civics. I'm not a really big car person. I think it's a cute little car. And so it was so great to, you know, give my debit card and be like, take 18 grand in cash. And that's really huge. Like the difference that I've come in such a short period, I mean, technically a short period of time, I think it was 6 years ago that we ended up selling that car, is huge.
So I think this speaks to a much larger sort of narrative than getting out of debt, personally. I mean, just based on a lot of the conversations I've had on this show and kind of what we're going through as a society, I mean, to me, this is sort of speaking to, you know, we had a guy here, and you guys will have heard this by the time you're listening, who walked a dog across America, and we were talking about this idea of, you know, happiness. And he said, you know, this really speaks to sort of the existential crisis that we are, you know, going through as a middle class or an upper middle class as Americans and people all over the world, where we're deeply dissatisfied with what we're doing, trying to escape it. And I guess for me, I mean, the question that comes from that is, you know, one, how do you recognize that? Two, you know, how do you do something about it when, I mean, you had a very realistic approach, which I appreciate. I mean, it's much more pragmatic than sort of the, you know, and you know, I mean, Pam Slim and I had talked about this. To some degree, we've made ourselves miserable with the conversation of quit your job, travel the world, you know, be a misfit, you know, start a 4-hour work week. When in all reality, I mean, let's be honest, Tim doesn't work 4 hours a week. We all know that. But I think we have perpetuated almost an epidemic of sorts when it comes to this. And I'm really curious to hear your take on all of that.
Yeah, what's really funny is way back then, there wasn't all of that, right? When I quit out of all of this, and like there was no resources online. I mean, this was 7 years ago before my son was born. There was none of this. And so to me, I thought like this couldn't be done. Thankfully, nowadays we have people that do it all the time, right? And it's not that big of a deal to be able to, okay, it is a big deal to you. And that's the one thing that I have to say. So you're right. Like we hear this all the time, quit your job, blah, blah, blah. But for the people that are going through it right now, like remember, Srini, when you went to your job every day and how bad that sucked. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how far away we can get away on the other side. And don't get me wrong, things suck today here for me now too. I'm sure things suck for you sometimes too. It's not
I still
like,
live at my parents. You know. So yeah, it sucks.
It's not sunshine and roses, right?
No.
And that's okay. But I think what's really, really awesome about you, you know, still living with your parents is that you're doing, it's a conscious choice. One of the things that I think is hugely important around money just in general is we've let money control us.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to control money. Right. So that's what gets you the freedom. That's what does all that other fun stuff. Everybody's always, the reason why we have money is to be able to have freedom, to have whatever you want, whatever it means, the security, I talk to a lot of women in regards to money, and it's funny, their thoughts of money are mostly security and like, oh, I can't do that because I don't have enough, or it's too scary, because everybody has this crazy mindset. And I can't say everybody, a lot of people have this crazy mindset around money. And especially, I mean, I talk to millionaires, right? So everyone's like, well, what do they have that I don't? And I don't like, I can't believe they have $1 million. Why don't they give it away? And all this other stuff. There's so many things around money, beliefs that we have, which can kind of get crazy. And sort of unpacking all that takes a while and is tough. And everybody still has it. No matter how much money you make, you still have all those issues with money. So what I want to do is open up the conversation on not it being a big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about money nowadays. It's so silly. You had my good friend Kate Northrup on the show, and Kate's from Maine, and I'm originally from Maine and stuff like that. And it's just so funny the way when we talk about money, it's very different than the way most people talk about money, because we've got, I mean, not that I'm saying we're perfect, because there's no way. We're definitely not perfect having to do with money in general. But we can open that conversation and not make it so heated or emotional and that sort of piece. So I think the opening up those communications, having more people talk about this in an open way, and it's not about like copywriting the hell out of, you know, quit your day job and live your passion kind of a thing, but really opening up the conversation and find out what people really think, I think is really important.
Yeah, well, I think that's going to be the focus of the majority of our chat. But you know, I want to go back to something you just said about, you know, letting money control you versus you controlling your money. You know, it's funny, my sister is here about a week ago, and she's going to be in a significant amount of student loan debt because she's a doctor. And we were talking about this, and you know, it's funny because doctors aren't making what they used to. And she's going to be an anesthesiologist, which she'll make plenty of money. But she pulled up an article on her iPhone, and she said, you know, there's an I think it was some CNN or some article that said, you know, medical school, the $1 million mistake. And she said, can you believe this? This is what they say, like that you literally could spend a lifetime to pay off this debt. But, you know, to me, when I looked at that and I said, you know, when you've got such a gargantuan amount of it, I realized, you know, you can either become a slave to it and let it dictate your entire life, or just deal with it. Like, I realized, I said, you know, okay, yeah, there's a lot of it. I don't know how we're going to tackle it, but I'm not going to let my life be dictated by that one thing. Because, you know, like, I thought, you know, what if you get to the end of your life and what you've accomplished is paying off debt, and that's it?
Mm-hmm.
That became the meaning of your life. I thought, well, that's a pretty meaningless and empty life. And, you know, she said, well, she had a friend whose dad, you know, was a corporate lawyer and went to med school at the age of 40. And he said, I'm just going to keep paying it. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to live my life.
Definitely. The hard thing is that I've got a story too, where I let money sort of, and student loans, make my decisions for me. So I started out in college as an art major. I was in medical illustration, actually.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's random.
I know, right? And what's really funny, like I was, you know, voted most artistic in my class and all that fun stuff. And I remember going to school, and I was a computer geek too, don't get me wrong. Like I worked at an internet company when I was 16. But which is very different, right? I was an art major and computer geek. But the funny thing is I went to school and I started my first semester and I went, I am not going to pay, because I think it was $37,000 a year. I'm not going to pay $37,000 a year so I can learn how to draw and get out and only make 50.
Uh-huh.
Which sucks, right? Because yeah. I liked drawing. Now, number one, they had turned it into more of like a, it wasn't a passion anymore, and that's really difficult. So I sort of had that lesson fast. Mm-hmm. When you have to draw for 50 hours straight, it's not as fun anymore as what it used to be. So I ended up going, okay, I'm really good at computers. It comes really easy to me. And you can make a lot of money doing that. So it's way worth $37,000 a year to be able to make 100 grand a year later, uh-huh. right? So I ended up switching from medical illustration to information technology, which is kind of funny, right? Uh-huh. Very different switch. And they wanted females because there's like no females back at the time in IT. So they're like, sure, no problem at all. We'll switch you over right away. And the funny thing is, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think it was a good switch for what I did, just because I didn't want to make my passion, my hobby, uh-huh. My career, because I don't think that would have worked out well. But the funny thing is IT was sort of my fallback. So I was like, yeah, I'll do this. I'll make money. I started going and got a job working 40 hours a week while I was in school. And that's when the debt started, right? I bought my first house when I was 19. I wanted to have exactly what my parents had. So at the age of 19, I had me and my husband, well, we weren't married at the time, but we had two new cars. We had a house. We had, you know, a white picket fence at 19, which is kind of silly. And so I had already got myself into these chains and I didn't even realize it, right? And mm-hmm. I knew, like, moving forward, getting into all that debt, just moving forward and going, well, guess what? I don't really like IT either. Mm-hmm. Who knew? Right? But, I mean, the thing is that we can't make decisions knowing later what's going to happen, right? Yeah. You never know, unfortunately. You have to make the decision, the best decision you have, with the information you have at the time, unfortunately. Right?
Yeah, no, I totally get
that. We can't tell the future. So then I went to school for IT. And, you know, 3 years, I mean, I was 24 when I realized how much I hated my job. So seriously, it was like 2 years after I got out of school. I was like, wow, this sucks too. Now let's change careers completely. Mm-hmm. And I had a ton of debt and I felt so responsible that I had to stay at that job so I could pay off that debt. Because even intangibly in my brain, for my belief, I was like, well, I can't change my career until I pay off all the debt of my previous decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was afraid I wasn't going to make any money in whatever the other thing was that I chose, and that I was dumb for taking on that much debt and hating what I did, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's really so funny to think about this, right? I mean, I think back to the start of my career and how money was the determining factor. I had a number in mind, and I said, okay, the number. I mean, I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area post right after the first .com bubble burst, and you know, I was like, okay, unless I make $50,000. That has to be my salary. I'm not going to be able to afford to live here or even survive. And I think that I made, as a result of that, I made choices where my talents were mismatched with my environment. And it took 10 years to figure that out. It took 10 years to say, I've done nothing but make wrong decisions in my career. And it's all been dictated by, you know, this story that I've told myself around money that, hey, if I go do something, like I look back at it and I think, you know, if I had been wise and said, you know what, I'm going to take the job as an intern at some agency, you know, on the track to being a creative director, I probably might have made a lot more money later in my life as a byproduct of that. But like you said, you don't realize those things. And that's kind of why I got to the point where I said, you know, I'm not going to let this dictate my life. I think that this really, to me, is one of the conversations that we've had a handful of times on the show about learning to separate your circumstances from your identity. That's something that has become very, very powerful for me, is that, okay, yeah, so this is the situation, but it doesn't define who I am and where I'm going to end up.
Definitely. That's huge. Because as soon as I quit my six-figure job, I realized my identity was stolen from me, which sucks. You don't realize when you're going through life. Like when you were going through life, you didn't realize that you were making those decisions just for the money. Like it was smart. That's what successful people do, is mm-hmm. they move up, and that's sort of the whole point. And it's a huge dichotomy. Like we shouldn't be going after and making decisions solely on that, right? We want to have a successful life, not just a successful money career. So being able to quit was heart-wrenching, which I know like, I'm really lucky, right? I'm lucky and I worked my butt off to be able to quit my job. But as soon as I quit my job, I was like, I am no longer the woman that's the breadwinner. I'm no longer the woman that makes six figures, because that meant something to me, because that was my whole goal, right? Mm-hmm. In life, I wanted to be a millionaire. And I had no idea how I was going to define myself. And I became a mom. So actually the rest of the story is the reason why I wanted to quit my job is because I traveled around the world, around the country, and I wanted to have a baby, and I couldn't, I wasn't going to leave on Monday and come home on Friday if I had a baby. So while we were paying off all that debt, I was pregnant. And so I quit when my son was 4 months old, and I defined myself as, okay, then I'm a mom. Right? Which is what I had wanted to be. Mm-hmm. So I sort of put this term, okay, now I'm a mom. But then that didn't really fit very well either. Not that I'm not a mom. You know what I mean? I have two kids now. I'm totally a mom. But that's not the identity that I really, really wanted to have. And letting go of that, being able to go, okay, I'm not the breadwinner. That doesn't really matter. I remember being told a story when I was sort of going through this struggle that really helped me, is that they say it was a Buddhist sort of story, and it talks about looking at a tree, right? And imagine you look at the tree, and in your mind, as soon as you see a tree, and I'm looking out the window, I see a pond and some trees. I see a tree, and as soon as you see one, the name pops up in your brain, right? It's a tree. That's what we've been told. It's a tree. It could be named whatever the hell, it doesn't matter. It exists the way it is, whether it has a label or not. And they told me, like, okay, imagine you're on an island and there is no such thing as, you know, making six figures. There is no such thing as, you know, being a mom. Who are you? Mm-hmm. And that was a really hard question, because I'm like, I don't know. I've only defined myself in terms that everybody else knows, right? I'm a mom. I make good money. I'm successful, quote unquote, whatever. And really trying to get down to the essence of who you are. I mean, I did a lot of meditation at that point. I also had a very colicky baby. So it was a really tough time. And it started to strip away all the things that I had believed about myself beforehand. So really being able to sort of get down to brass tacks and just be like, who am I? Which is a hard question when you're not, you know, defining yourself on other people's terms. And I don't know if anyone ever figures it out 1,000% over, but it really helped open that conversation. So I didn't have to worry as much about being successful, quote unquote. If I was happy, that made a difference, right? Mm-hmm. And so really trying to dive into the stuff that I didn't want to look at before was what really happened as soon as I quit my job. So it wasn't even, you know, yay, I quit my job and now I'm happy. It was, oh, crap, now what do I do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one is there's this myth of, hey, yay, I quit my job, I'm happy. I think that it's a really weird thing. I think that people think that you have a moment of success of any sort, and that's what suddenly, like, you just wake up and, you know, you're running around, you know, with a shit-eating grin on your face like a Zen Buddhist on ecstasy. But I found that's the furthest thing from the truth. But you've said something three times in that last little bit about this idea of defining yourself based on other people's expectations and other people's definitions. And that to me is very rich territory and probably also a potential landmine, which is why I want to dig into it. there's something there that I think is very, very, that also is very much an epidemic of our time. And I'm very curious, you know, what you think it is that allowed you to let go of that and what, you know, I mean, you said yourself, it's a really hard question to answer, because once you get to that, I mean, the truth of who you are is probably one of the scariest things you're ever going to confront in your life.
Definitely. I think one of the hard pieces was looking in a mirror, right? And going like, okay, what is this all about? And what do I want? I had a hard time asking what I wanted. And I still to this day have a hard time. I'm like, oh, is everybody happy? And women do this a lot, don't get me wrong. Like, oh, I need to make everyone happy, moms especially. It's all about everybody else. So really trying to pull it in and go, what do I want? It's really important. And what do I want that isn't what everybody else says I should want? Mm-hmm. Right. So like even just this move to Austin, everybody thought we were crazy, like nuts. And I'm like, I can always like it's well, number one, Austin is really warm compared to Maine. I moved from Maine to Austin. So you would think they would think it'd be smart. Right. But I got a lot of people going like, well, why are you doing that? You're moving away from your family. Like my mom and my husband's parents are there. Mm-hmm. But we didn't want that to hold us back, right? I want to try something new, and I don't want somebody else who, of course, my mom misses me terribly. She calls me all the time, and I feel horrible because I took her grandchildren away. You know what I mean? It makes me feel really bad. But being able to not go on everybody else's expectations, right? It doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. I want to move to Austin. Mm-hmm. My sister-in-law was like, well, what's going to happen if it doesn't work out? I'm like, I don't know. I'll figure it out. I'll move back. It's not that big of a deal. I don't know why these things are such an issue, right? I love change, number one, so that makes it a little bit easier. But we don't even recognize the fact that our beliefs are other people's beliefs, right? I ended up chatting with someone when we were talking about moving away, and we're planning on going back to Maine for the summer. So, because Texas is hot in the summer, and I'm from Maine, so I'm probably not used to that.
Texas is unbearably hot during the summer. You're making a wise decision.
Good. See, and thankfully, I've worked my butt off, so I have that freedom, right? So don't get me wrong, that is awesome. So being able to move back and forth is really cool. But talking to someone who almost gets mad at you for having that freedom is really interesting. You can totally see things bubble to the surface for them. Well, why can you do that? You know, I'm like, well, I worked my butt off. You know, I have a business where I can live anywhere, thankfully. Like, I could go somewhere else. I could go to Thailand with the kids if I really wanted to. And to them, it hits pain points. It hits these buttons of like expectations and what you're supposed to do. And like, well, I could never do that and all that other things. And unfortunately, we run our lives based on other people's feelings too, right? In Maine, no offense, I love Maine. I grew up in Maine. I've lived in a bunch of different places, but the mentality there is very moving forward, right? Like all you do is you got to do what you got to do, and life is hard. And winters are cold, and that's sort of the way it is. So when someone bucks the trends, it makes everybody, you know, unsettle from that rock that they've been living under for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that I was doing it so much, too. Me and my husband sort of had a talk last year, actually only a few months ago, going, why are we here? Like, we were planning because we wanted to move back to be closer to family and stuff like that, because that's what you do. Like, you want to be with family. But we don't really like living here. I mean, I like being with my family, but it's really cold in Maine for like 8 months out of the year. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we here? And thankfully, we could ask ourselves this question, but a lot of people don't even ask themselves that question. They don't ask what they want, mm-hmm. truly. You know, and so we ended up, thankfully, I have a wonderful husband who had never been to Austin ever and was like, sure, let's move there, right? Because he's crazy. Uh-huh. The first time he was ever here was when we moved in.
Wow.
Yeah, and we sold our house. In Maine, everybody's like, oh, you're never going to sell your house. It's going to take you a year to sell your house, blah, blah, blah. We sold it in 11 days. And then we were like, oh, crap. Because we had no idea that it would take that long. But everybody's like, oh, the market in Maine sucks and it's going to take you forever and all this stuff. So, I mean, yes, people will tell you everything and you won't even recognize the fact that you'll probably think very similar things. Uh-huh. So trying to step outside of, you know, the sphere of influence that you have and really ask yourself what you truly want. Uh-huh. And it might not be, you know, it might not even be right to tell you the truth. I say that life is about progress, uh-huh. right? We never know what we're going to want or what's going to be good until you do it. We make guesses on goals. We make guesses on what we really want. And then we get there, right? I thought I was going to like Austin. Thankfully, we got here and I'm like, oh, it's warm. This is awesome. But I know, who knows, right? Yeah. I might come out here and hate it, but I won't know until I go and give it a try. And so I don't think we do that enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the other thing for me when I'm listening to you describe this is like looking at why we do the things we do. I mean, after a certain point, like, you know, when you say, I have no idea, it's just the way it is, then you know you're like, okay, wait a minute, this is just robotic behavior. Now you're really just being controlled by what somebody else has told you, what somebody else has agreed is the right thing to do. When in all reality that, you know, I don't think, and I think, again, you know, this brings us back to that whole idea that even the people that you listen to on our show or the people that you see, you know, in the online world preaching all this stuff, like, they may not be right. You know, they may not be right about what they're telling you. Like, maybe, you know, I mean, I always think back to the experience of living in Costa Rica. And when I was talking to the guy who walked his dog across America, I think that we all have this idea that these experiences are going to completely redefine who we are and change us as people. And we're going to come back enlightened. And I remember telling, you know, this guy, Tyler Colson, I said, you know what? I didn't come back enlightened. I was a much better surfer when I came back. That's about it. You know? And I think that we sometimes think that, hey, we're going to find answers in all these things. But I think really the question of why we're doing what we're doing is one that we don't really give enough attention to.
A lot of times, though, we don't have enough awareness, right? Yeah. Thankfully, if you're listening to this podcast, you care about this stuff, right? So you probably have more awareness than the average person, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, the people in Maine don't even realize that they're doing it. And I can call them out, but calling them out probably isn't a good idea either yeah. if they don't want to hear it. But for me, I try and set up systems where other people can call me out, mm-hmm. right? I have mastermind groups and stuff. So that way, because sometimes I can't see it either. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's really important to let go of all that, right? And to realize, because I've interviewed 130 millionaires, mm-hmm. right? And at the beginning, I used to put them on a big pedestal. Oh my God, he's a millionaire. It's so amazing, you know? And I thought that they were going to have these amazing, crazy insights that was going to help so much. And don't get me wrong, they have a lot of wisdom. Mm-hmm. But each person did it their own way.
Yeah.
Right. And some of them screwed the hell up. Some of them didn't know what they were doing. Some of them fell into it. Some of them worked their butt off. Like it depends. Everybody has their own story. And I think that's what I like to talk about a lot is I'm creating my life story. Mm-hmm. Right. And I want to make it as interesting as humanly possible because that's what gets me jazzed. I like change. That's why we just randomly move and stuff like that. I love going out and trying new things. And if I were to sort of do quote unquote what's successful, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I like money and I like all that other stuff, and that's okay too. But I really, really want to have a life to look back on because one of the crazy things that I've learned in interviewing all these millionaires and living my own life is really paying attention to the journey, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about the journey. And that's what they tell you. And it's a cliche. And I totally get that. But the point that really hits home for me is when I don't want to be in the journey mm-hmm. and I have to be like, oh, this is part of the journey too. Damn it. Right? Like this is it. Whether it's good, whether it's bad, whatever it is, you learn all the way. I know that's cliche too, but to be able to bring the awareness to that while you're going through it, not when you're on the other side and you're like, oh, it was about the journey. You know, that's what really matters. So every day I try and think about like moving forward and taking this day as it is. And of course, I'm not going to be as productive as I want, right? Because my expectations are always way too high. You know, something might be good that might happen. Something might be bad that might happen. My business might be crappy, but my personal life might be awesome. It's all over the place. It's all a journey. And as long as you can be amazed at the person that you are, right? Love yourself every day. I'm really trying to pay attention to what I want and what I desire and ask myself that question more and grow. Then that's what it's about, right? It doesn't matter how much money you have. People can do that whether they're millionaires or not.
Yeah.
They just have more options if they have more money, right? But being able to go through and listen at that each one of these stories, whether it's my story, whether, you know, everybody listening to all your different interviews, everybody has their own story. None of them are alike. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter in the end how much money you end up with, how much any of that stuff. It's as long as you know what you want, which a lot of people don't, mm-hmm. right? Really get to the core of what you want and not what everybody else wants. But those things that really matter to you and then do more of that, mm-hmm. right? Whether or not you have student loans, whether or not you push forward on that. I think that's the key thing that I learned when I went after the money, right? Mm-hmm. I was all about the money. Then I was like, oh crap, now I don't have any money. And now I make more than I made before. And so the money will come and go. The everything will come and go just sort of the way it works. Mm-hmm. But I've uncovered the fact that I need to be asking myself more questions. I need to be probably getting away from the computer and being out in nature a lot more. The weird, crazy stuff that seems so simplistic mm-hmm. and not that big of a deal. But those have been huge revelations for me.
Okay, awesome. There's just a ton of gold here, and I'm really glad you brought this up, because I mean it's like a perfect setup to talk about. Really, where I want to take this next is really the narrative of millionaires. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things that it's taken me a long time to get my head around, you know, that pedestal idea you talked about, I kind of had it too, right? I remember Greg Hartle sent me a text last year. He said, by the way, he said, one little piece of advice. He said, I've noticed when you talk to people who you consider really important, you sound fanboyish, he said, and you shouldn't. And I said, that's actually a really wise observation. But then he also turned me on to something that really, when I became aware of that, it was kind of like, holy crap. He said, your entire worldview is really warped in terms of how you compare yourself to people, because he said your filter through which you view the world is the upper echelon of people who do things. Because what do? I talk to people like you all day long. I talk to people like, you know, Scott Adams. I mean, the world's most famous syndicated cartoonist. That's he's like, these are not average people. They're not normal. And so I think it's really what I want to talk about, really, you know, we've spent a lot of time dissecting identity and talking about our own narrative. I'm really curious about sort of the common thread in the narrative that you have found through people who are millionaires. I mean, is there a common thread? I mean, I know you said it's all different and you were kind of hoping that you could find something. I mean, what do you think it is? Is there anything that makes them millionaires? Like, are the stories they tell themselves different? What are their identities like? What's the identity that they've crafted for themselves?
So it's funny, a lot of people ask me, what's the secret sauce, right? And everyone's like, oh, tell me the secret sauce. And I'm always like, well, you know there's not a secret sauce, but let me tell you this,
yeah.
Right? So we wish there was a secret sauce.
Well, yeah, we would all be putting it on our burgers.
Yeah, but I think there are definitely, so after 10 interviews, I remember going to my mentor and going, wow, they're saying similar things, which was really interesting to me. Because that's sort of, not that there's like this, you know, step-by-step plan to become a millionaire or anything like that. But it's really interesting to know that there are correlations. And I love data, right? So I wanted to find out, especially when the book came out. So if you get the book, I did surveys because I like data. So I wanted to know, did they have entrepreneurial parents,
mm-hmm.
right? Because maybe that starts them out. And actually, to tell you the truth, it starts them out younger, which makes them successful or become a millionaire earlier, is what my data found. So a lot of like really interesting stuff like that. But then there's intangible stuff. Right. And I think that's what you're sort of talking about.
Yeah.
Like, what is that intangible stuff that we can't, you know, grasp? And to tell you the truth, there's a couple things that I've found that were really important to me and actually helped me shift my worldview too. One is pretty predictable, right? That they care about growth,
mm-hmm.
right? They invest in themselves. They really pay attention to getting better, right? And so it's a process. So some of them take longer than others. You know, some of them were 50 when they hit the million mark. Some of them are like 23, which is insane. But the fact that they're really paying attention to always learning and always growing is huge, because a lot of people don't,
mm-hmm.
right, that aren't millionaires. The other thing that I think is really important is that they know it's possible. Like, no, not just think, not just sort of like, eh. Because one of the questions that I had, and this is one that I asked a long, long time ago when I was 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know if they knew beforehand if they were going to be a millionaire. So that was one of my questions that I used to ask at the very beginning all the time. Did you know that you were going to be a millionaire? And I don't know why that was so interesting to me. I think it was because when I was little, I sort of had this weird knowing that I would be successful, right? Like, mm-hmm. oh, my parents instilled in me, I can do anything, blah, blah, blah. And so I kept asking them that. And I got mixed reviews, actually, to tell you the truth. It wasn't like, oh, 100% said, yes, I knew I was going to be a millionaire before I became a millionaire. It wasn't like that at all. Some were like, some like J.V. Crumb was like, oh, I knew. He's like, I had the same thing. When I was 8, I wanted to be a millionaire. And I did, right? So some people were like that. Other people were like, that wasn't even on my radar. I just wanted to grow something awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think having, you know, the goal of a million matters. But what I do think is knowing that it was possible. The people that did it that didn't really have that either had influences or were able to see and really know that other people could do it too. So why the hell couldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so having that knowing and that almost confidence in that was really, really important. Because if you don't believe that it can happen, well, it's going to be a lot harder for you to actually have it happen. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds kind of simplistic, but that was one thing that kept showing up over and over and over again. They knew that they were enough. Like, they knew that they could have $1 million in net worth.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, makes all the sense in the world. So let's dig deeper into that, because you've brought up this distinction between knowing and thinking. You know, Greg Hartle and I have talked about this quite a bit on our backstage segments, but I mean, how do you get from thinking to knowing it's possible? I mean, I think that there's, I mean, like, my own personal experience with this has been constantly leveling up. It's like, okay, I know it's possible to sell 1,000 copies of a book because I did it once. Mm-hmm. I know it's possible, but I mean, I didn't set out with the goal of, hey, this is it. Like, I have to make this happen. To me, it was incremental steps that kept proving to me that, you know, okay, it's possible to keep going one level higher. But I'm very curious, you know, I mean, through your own journey, I mean, you've obviously learned to make that distinction between thinking and knowing. Like, what's, I mean, what is that? Like, how do you get that? How do you make that shift?
So personally, I'm very analytical, mm-hmm. right? And so I think there's two sides of it, right? There's the analytical side. So I need to know someone who has done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Or know that it's possible, right? So to me, it wasn't enough to read a book and be like, oh, this guy said it was possible. I could totally do it too. Like, I wanted to get it directly from the source. And I wanted them to sort of be like, yeah, of course you could do it, right? That definitely helps too. Along with the exact same thing as you, like leveling up a little bit at a time, right? When I first started coaching, I was like, yeah, I suck, you know? And then someone was like, oh, you're really amazing. And so those days that I felt I suck, I read through all my testimonials and was like, oh, I'm awesome, right? So there's those silly small things. And now, like, I know I'm good at what I do, mm-hmm. Because I've done it so long and I've created so many amazing stories for other people. Like, that's one thing that I know, but it took time to know that. It wasn't innate, mm-hmm. right? So that's, I mean, and that sort of pulls into the emotional side, right? So there's sort of the analytical side. I see that it was done. It's totally possible. And then there's the other side of going, oh, I'm not good enough. I suck, right? Because everybody's got that. Millionaires have that too, by the way. I wanted to ask, and they totally say the same thing. So it's not like this is, I mean, some of them, don't get me wrong, some of them are like, I'm awesome. But but a lot of them aren't. So don't feel bad if you have I'm not good enough thoughts. Everybody has those. And so, but it's getting past those,
mm-hmm.
right? And moving forward anyway, right? So I like to look at things like a game, right? I'm a geek. So I used to play computer games all the time, or video games. And I used to play The Sims. I don't know if you ever played that a long time ago. Right. And so I remember, and I cared all about God mode, and I was a big geek. And so I actually wrote about this in my book too, because I think this is important in my journey and like this shift,
mm-hmm.
because my whole goal when I was little was to be a millionaire. And I remember being like, oh, in The Sims, I want the best cars and I want the best stuff and it's totally awesome. And I got God mode and I bought everything. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, there's nothing left to buy. All right. Game's over. Right? Crap. Now what do I do? So the thing is, and I've realized that I've played like the prosperity game about money and stuff like that. And as soon as you have tons of money, you're like, oh, great. Now what? Right. And some of the millionaires, actually, it led to some of the unhappiest times of their life because they thought the money was going to mean something. So what I really want to do is play it like a game. Right. I want to go, hey, let's see what this mission will get me. Right. I'll move to Austin. Let's see what that does. Really trying to not put so much pressure mm-hmm. on it all. Right. Because in general, what we tend to do is, like you said, like, oh, I need to sell 1,000 books. Oh, my gosh, this is going to be hard, or this is going to be whatever. Really trying to sort of look at it as, so I don't know. I don't know if this works yet. I think it will. Let's give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you give it a shot. And usually if it works out, you're like, yeah, hey, that worked. I know it worked. Great. Right. And so you do that a little bit at a time and you grow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, looking back, I never in a million years would have thought where I would be where I am now. I mean, don't get me wrong. I knew that I was going to be successful, but I didn't know how, and I didn't know all that other stuff. I just knew that I could mm-hmm. because other people before who, no offense, I've interviewed some millionaires and I'm like, wow, they cannot spell worth anything or, you know what I mean? All these silly, stupid things. I mean, they're just people, but realizing that they're closer to you, right? They're the same. They're just a person. Just like when you saw Glenn Beck, right? He's just a guy. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong, like celebrity, whatever, a bazillion people love him. That's great. But he's still just a guy. And I think we really need to get our expectations. All the stuff that we want to do in the world has been done, pretty much, mm-hmm. right? I want to go to space. That's been done, like, thankfully. There's so many things that has already been done. And if it's been done, you can figure out a way to do it too, right? I think we don't give ourselves enough credit. If you play it like a game, and yeah, things are going to be scary, and yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable and all that other fun stuff. But if you play it for fun, as a game, then that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. At least it does to me.
Okay, awesome. So this brings up one more question, and it's going to kind of reference one of the conversations that has been a running thread on our backstage segments about the notion of talent and whether some people are inherently just built that way and born with certain talent and intelligence that makes them capable of reaching these goals. It's been a very touchy subject, one that has caused a lot of conversations in our community, and I'm very curious to hear your take on it. I mean, do you think that, like, you're inherently born with some talent or intelligence that leads to these kinds of circumstances? Because I really do wonder about that now. I'm beginning to question this because, you know, the more and more I talk to Greg Hartle about it, you know, I realize that maybe there's some validity there, as disturbing as that conclusion is. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, even, you know, one of our most gifted writers said that, you know, that we had here on the show, she said some people have a lyric gift with words. Mm-hmm. And, I always say, you know, I was talking to Sarah Peck and I said, you know, I look at the way you write and I look at the way Amber Ray writes and I don't see that in myself. I don't have that lyric gift with pen and paper. I might have it on the air, but I definitely don't have it the way they do. With pen and paper. I think that is something that is inherently part of who they are. And I'm really curious to hear your take on this when it comes to the world of millionaires.
So, and that's okay, by the way. Like, everybody, I think, looking at millionaires and stuff like that, yeah, people have strengths. I like to call them strengths better than gifts, but whatever, same thing, right? Some people have strengths, and that's okay. Right. And some people's strengths are like ADD, which is kind of silly, right? Mm-hmm. I interview so many millionaires. And what's really funny is ADD is a running thread through that, too.
That doesn't surprise me.
So crazy. And they're pretty good at harnessing it now, thankfully. Right. And so I think that's one of the key pieces, too. But yeah, you look at the difference, right, of 130 different millionaires, and they all have different strengths. It's not as though they were born knowing how to do business or whatever, right, or whatever it is. I personally think a lot of the business skills are learned, mm-hmm. right? Things like you're talking about, though, those innate talents. Yeah, I can draw really, really well, right? Mm-hmm. No idea why. I just always, since I was little, I was able to draw really, really well. Right? Not that I do that much of it anymore. I just do it for fun. But really being able to know that, yeah, there are some people that are born with different things than you, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I totally believe that you do. What I think millionaires are really good at are harnessing their strengths. Right? So if you're not a writer, mm-hmm. and by the way, I'm not a writer, which is funny. I am a writer because I write, mm-hmm. right? And that's, you know, that's a key distinction. But classifying myself as a writer, I'm a communicator, mm-hmm. and I can use writing as a form. I'm writing a book, right? I never in a million years thought that the person who got a C, my only C in all of high school.
It was in English?
Yeah, it was English. It was writing, actually. Yeah. And my best friend growing up wanted to be an author. Mm-hmm. And I'm the one with the book deal, which is silly, right?
Yeah.
But that's okay. Right? This is sort of the path. And I'm like, huh, I guess I am an author. Cool. Because I play it like a game, right? Like, oh, let's try this. Hey, look, they actually give me money. Sweet. So I think that's really, really important. And looking at the millionaires, yeah, they definitely have different strengths. And they've gotten really good at honing in on their strengths. One of the things that quite a few people have told me, they're like, the book Strengths Finder 2.0, like they recommend that book a lot. Mm-hmm. They recommend like trying to find out what you're really good at and what you get jazzed about, right? Mm-hmm. Like you get jazzed about talking to people and really getting these deep conversations, right? One of the millionaires I interviewed was like, you should just interview people all the time. I'm like, well, I like doing other stuff too. And they're like, no, you should just do interviews all the time. You're really good at it.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome, right? And so trying to set up a business, if that's what your goal is, where you're only doing that and you can create revenue, that's awesome. Right. Well, and I think that's what millionaires are really good at.
Coincidentally, I mean, we've seen our success when we sat down and Greg made me strip away all the things I was average at. He said, don't do any more book marketing and launches for people. Don't do any more freelance work. Let's just have you focus on this. It will turn around. Which is interesting. I think that there's a lot to be said for focus.
Well, it's hard too, because
yeah,
if you're an entrepreneur, well, you want to do everything, mm-hmm. right? Because, well, either there isn't enough funds and you have to do everything.
Yeah.
Or you're like, well, but I can do it better. Like, even if you're just a bit above average, we're like, no, I can do it better, right? And it's ours and it's our baby. And having that perspective, thankfully you have Greg, who could be like, yeah, no, don't do that. And you're like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Mm-hmm. So really having that is really important. But I don't think we ask ourselves that question enough, right? Yeah. And I didn't either, especially at the beginning. At the beginning, you're wearing all hats. You're trying to figure it all out. Why millionaires know this stuff, because they're at a point in which that's what they can pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are just trying to eat, right? And they have to do book marketing because they need cash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then that's just part of your story. And if that's where you are, that's where you are. But if you can strip that away and really figure it out, right? Living with your parents is totally cool because you're figuring that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And so being able to figure that out is part of that journey. And how do we set it up so I can do what I really love and what I'm amazing at, and therefore be great at it, instead of doing the stuff, that's kind of crappy. And I think that's one thing that millionaires have gotten really, really good at. Mm-hmm.
So let's do this. Let's shift gears a little bit. We've only got a little bit more time left. Talk to me about the process of writing a book. You know, what I really want to talk about is the positioning of this, because I think that, you know, it's not like there's an endless amount of books that have been written about money. And that's where, you know, so I'm very curious, I mean, kind of how you approached this and how you positioned it so that it became compelling and a story that people would want to hear.
Definitely. So one of the things that is compelling to me is asking stories, right? Asking the stories of millionaires. So it's not a book guru who wrote a book and was like, this is the 5 steps to do it, or this is my story. Like, that's great, but that's because you have the time or the whatever to write the book. I wanted to talk to people who were in it, right? Not necessarily writing books about mm-hmm. it. I have like random weird millionaires. One guy has a company called Celebridux and he makes rubber ducky celebrities, right? Like little rubber duckies that look like celebrities, mm-hmm. like silly, silly things that you would probably not be talking to him because he probably wouldn't be writing a book about it. So really trying to figure out and I personally like compiling all that and go, if millionaires want to find a mentor, what did they do? And then I have like 10 stories of this is exactly how they did it. Here's a template that Derek Sivers gave me on how to find a mentor, right? So being able to find the compilation of ideas that has worked for many of them, right? Every story is going to be a little different. I think it's inspiring to really pull out the stories, especially like the before and after stories, to realize that they're just people. Right. So I think my book in general, which is different than like The Millionaire Next Door, which is very data driven. And this is how millionaires do this. And this is how millionaires do that. Right. That's great. And I liked that book because I like data, too. But what I really, really wanted to know was like, how do you feel about money? And like, was it always that way? And how did you learn that? And try and get their story of the evolution, because I do think they've evolved a lot, right? You can hear it in their stories. One of the reasons why I think they're so successful is because they're okay with moving forward and growing and changing. And I like hearing that story of evolution. I also like the tactical things, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. The book is a lot about how I quit my job and paid off the debt, but it's also a lot about how millionaires did what they did, right? How do they start a business? Mm-hmm. What's the compilation of 100 millionaires? What did they do that was different? Right? Did they have a 100-page business plan? No. I'll definitely tell you they did not. So most of them were like, I wrote it on a napkin. So an amazing business can be written on a napkin or started in college or whatever it is. So trying to figure out what those are so we don't put so much pressure on ourselves. We assume they're doing everything right. Right? Like they know the right way and the, you know, and it's not. Everybody sort of has their own way of doing it, and being able to sort of pull those together and be like, oh, these are similar ways that they do it. That's really good to know. So that's probably the best way to move forward. And that's what I've tried to do, is really pull out the stories of showing that they're just people. They make spelling mistakes. They, you know, screw up all the time. They get the times wrong for things. They, you know, don't know what they're doing half the time. That's okay. All that stuff is stuff that we don't like talking about. We assume that they're on these pedestals, just like with celebrities. But celebrities do the same thing. That's why we're all excited about listening to when they screw up, right? Mm-hmm. I want to know what billionaires screw up too. And so those are big pieces of the book, especially I have a whole chapter on fear. And they were really candid and talked all about, like, when they're scared and what do they do when they're scared, and that stuff that we don't really open up very much. So that's where I was going at it with the book. I really wanted people to see that millionaires are just people, and I'm just a person, and it doesn't really matter. We're just all creating our own story.
I love it. Well, Jamie, this has been awesome. You know, I'm really, really, it was so cool to hear this version of your story, which was clearly very different than the one I had you tell me before. I mean, I've learned a ton talking to you, and I think this has been a really inspiring and eye-opening chat, and one that I really hope helps to change the conversation that we're having around money. You know, something that I think is a very sensitive issue for many of us. So I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with our listeners here at The Unmistakable Creative.
And I just want to say, Srini, I love what you're doing. I love how you've changed the conversation. I mean, I remember being interviewed, you know, a while ago with you, and you've just come so far. Like that evolution I was talking about, like you can see it right there with you and everything that you're doing, which is just utterly amazing. So I really appreciate it.
Well, and if you guys really want a painful experience, I'll link the first interview I did with Jamie.
I hate doing that too. That always sucks. Don't like the old ones. No, but it's huge. Someone will be able to see the growth right there, right? Everybody's growing, and you can see the growth through you, which is amazing.
Cool. Well, for those of you guys listening, we'll wrap the show with that. Yeah, thanks again, Jamie.
Thank you, Srini.
This episode of The Unmistakable Creative has been brought to you by Selz. That's SELZ.com. If you're looking for a PayPal alternative to sell digital, physical products and services, check out Selz. Selz allows you to add your products and sell from any site in minutes without any complicated setup or hassle. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, a ton of Unmistakable Creative listeners are already using the product and absolutely love it. Our other sponsor for today's show has been FreshBooks, the cloud accounting solution built for small business owners just like you who want to skip the headaches of tax time. If you're a freelancer or a business owner who is sending invoices to clients on a regular basis, FreshBooks helps you reduce that process to the click of a button. It helps you save time and get paid faster and track revenue all in one place. And for a limited time, you can even get a free 60-day trial. That's 2 whole months to try the product. So make sure you enter the Unmistakable Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you support our show.
Thanks for listening in on another candid conversation at the Unmistakable Creative. Embrace your inner misfit, express your creative voice, and remember, the goal isn't to live forever, but to create something that will.